Hello and welcome to episode number 18 of iLoop, Interesting Lives of Ordinary People. My guest today is Helen Snape. Helen is, in her own words, a reformed people pleaser who discovered she had always put other people's needs and wants before her own. This meant leaving an abusive marriage and rebuilding her relationship with herself. She now helps others to recognize this people-pleasing trait in themselves and gives them the tools to make the necessary changes so they can live a happier and more fulfilled life. Helen is a healthy relationships coach who helps women reclaim their power and speak up for themselves. They learn to do this by building better boundaries and learning effective communication skills. Helen has been coaching for over 10 years, has a degree in psychology from the University of Warwick, and is qualified in mindfulness and coaching with trauma. She is an award-winning speaker and has been interviewed on BBC Radio, the Women's Economic Forum, and has been featured in Happyful magazine. I began by asking Helen to describe the event in her life that proved to be a turning point for her.
The turning point that always comes up for me, I think, when people ask me, is when my mother was diagnosed with cancer. She was diagnosed with myeloma, which is cancer of the bone marrow, and it's incurable. And when she was diagnosed, you know, she had no idea, you know, basically like what the prognosis would be, like how long she would have left to live. There was just a lot of uncertainty around that. And when I received that news, I think something just woke up inside of me. Mm-hmm. And I realized how short life is, how precious life is. Yeah. And it just took me, it made me take a step back about my own life and actually start questioning, you know, is this all there is? Actually, don't I deserve something more? Don't I deserve better? Like, couldn't I be happier? So it really, yeah, it really started me questioning those things.
And how long ago did this happen?
This was 6 years ago.
Okay.
And after my mum was diagnosed, she lived for another 3 years.
So tell me a little bit about your life at that time, and what was it about it that made you sort of step back and, you know, really look at it again and question whether this was how you wanted to live?
At the time, from the outside, it would have looked as if I had, you know, like the perfect kind of life. You know, I was living with my husband. We, you know, owned a flat together, had a very good job. And, you know, was kind of progressing there too. But it was a really good facade. Because, you know, and if anyone asked me, you know, how are you? Like, how's life? Then I would have just said, it's fine. And then I would very quickly have turned the questions back to them.
Yeah.
Because I was so miserable, and I felt like I was going crazy, and I felt confused, but didn't really understand why, and I didn't really feel like I could talk to anyone about it. I just knew that I was struggling at work, but even more so at home. I was very unhappy in my marriage, and I didn't really understand why. And I just knew that I needed help. And so it really was my mum having that diagnosis that actually then prompted me to seek that help. It really was the turning point. It was the point at which I decided to go and seek a therapist, just because I thought I was going crazy.
Yes.
And I needed to talk to somebody that I felt, you know, wasn't going to judge me and would just help me understand my own experience better. Yeah.
Was it the grief of, you know, discovering that your mom had this incurable cancer stirred up the grief that you'd suppressed for so long? It feels like you had, you know, you had misgivings and things, you were not happy. Trying to understand what, you know, what actually triggered you to sort of look at your life more deeply.
I think what it was that one of the things that I realized was that I would want to go and see my mum. And I knew that this would be a difficult negotiation with my husband. And that was making me angry. I think I didn't even recognize it as anger. Mm. I knew that I would want to be able to go and see her, and that I was going to have to carefully negotiate this with my husband, and he wouldn't be happy about it. And there would be a subtle kind of payback for me wanting to go and visit her and even then going and visiting her. And I just, yeah. And this part of me that had woken up was telling me, like, this is crazy. You know, life shouldn't be like this. Yeah. I need to do something about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And how long had you been married for at that point, Helen?
18 years.
And do you feel that you had experienced this sort of element of, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it feels like controlling like behavior. Had it been something that had been there all the time, or was it something that had developed later on in your marriage?
It had been there all the time. I didn't recognize it for what it was. I didn't know any different. You don't really know what's going on in other people's relationships. You don't know what's going on behind closed doors. And, you know, and we don't often talk about these things, especially when they're difficult. I felt that no one else would understand.
Yes.
What was going on. And so I didn't talk about it.
There's different kinds of, you know, dysfunctional relationships. And often we've been in it for so long that we don't realize it's dysfunctional anymore because it's become our normal. Until suddenly someone turns a mirror in a different place and we look at ourselves and we see, actually, you know what? This is probably not how it's meant to be.
Yes. And I think, yeah, you're right. We have to realize it for ourselves.
Yes.
Because there were occasions when people would say to me that, you know, that they were unhappy about my husband's behavior, for example. And I would defend him. Mm. I would minimize it, you know, I would excuse it. And yeah, and then I would probably find it quite difficult to talk to that person again.
Yeah.
So I, you know, it wasn't until I was ready to actually start questioning his behavior for myself that I was able to see it, I think, for what it really was.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, I guess it was like me coming out of that place of denial. Yeah.
Mm. So then what happened? So you went to a therapist.
I think that part of me knew, but I needed the validation. At that point, I needed that validation from somebody else that was objective.
Mm.
You know, and that I knew, you know, knew a lot about relationships, and so could help me identify, you know, what was going on for me and what was going on in this relationship. And so it really didn't take much for them to validate my experience and to validate how I was feeling, for me to accept for myself that this was an unhealthy and emotionally and psychologically abusive marriage. And then very, very quickly from there, I realized I wanted to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That can't have been easy. Tell us how you did that.
I think it was easier for me than it is for a lot of people. So for example, you know, we didn't have children. And also financially, I had my own resources. So that made it a lot more straightforward for me to leave. But emotionally and psychologically, it was still very difficult. So I needed that support from a therapist. And I also told two very close friends what I was planning to do. Just to kind of begin to get a bit of support, because I'd been mostly cut off from family and friends. So I didn't really have a support network, but I kind of, you know, I realized, well, I need something as I'm planning to leave. But it really didn't take me long at all. You know, once I decided that I wanted to leave, like I wanted to leave like yesterday. I couldn't wait to leave. And the way I did it, which I felt that I kind of had to do, was really literally to pack my bags and leave a note and basically leave. And that is what I did. But it was, I think it was the hardest thing that I've ever done and the scariest.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? And, you know, feel free to not answer this if you feel uncomfortable. To really get a glimpse into what abuse meant for you, because very often we may be experiencing things that we don't call it abuse, or we don't see it as something that's negative, because we just think, well, that's how it always is in relationships. Can you maybe give us one or two examples of the kind of things that isolated you from your family, or made you feel like you didn't even have the freedom to choose when you would go and see your mum, for instance?
So I mean, the first thing I would say is that quite a lot of my experience in the marriage I don't remember, and so that's quite common, I think. I think it's the brain's very helpful way of protecting us from all the terrible things that kind of went on. There are a few things that I remember, and there are a very few things that I wrote down, so I kind of have that. But yeah, that can almost kind of be an indicator in itself, like you don't really remember what's gone on. There were red flags at the very beginning of the relationship, which of course I ignored because I was in love and love is blind. Such as, you know, my husband, he would fly into rages, which I'm not sure, like when he was in a rage, whether he could have even like controlled it. And it was verbal, but it was quite frightening when they happened. And you know, and it could be about almost anything, really. And it was just, I mean, that was like kind of an obvious one. But it was also things like with the support of, you know, family and friends, my husband, he began to kind of just pick divisions with them. That he would start saying about how he would feel disrespected by members of my family. And I really didn't understand where he was coming from. But he was my husband. And so I felt I need to believe him. You know, even if I don't understand it, I need to believe him, and I need to support him. But that, obviously, that was very difficult, because it was kind of putting me like in the middle of, you know, oh, choose your family, choose your husband. So that was very difficult. I remember, for example, he would just like expect me to kind of drop any plans that I might have to go and support him in events that he wanted to get involved in, you know, and I would need to be there to kind of like to take care of him. And yeah, and if I didn't do that, then he'd either get very cross about that, or it would be more subtle. So he would just make sure that he got his message across in some other way. So it may be that he would, I don't know, we'd get home and he'd say that, I don't know, the bar of soap was in the wrong place. And then like suddenly like this would become like the biggest issue ever. And he'd like create this amazing story about how this, you know, was incredibly problematic for him. And, you know, and I did it on purpose. And you just, honestly, you couldn't make it up.
But those kind of relationships, you know, it's never black and white, is it? Yeah. I mean, obviously there's the rages, there's all this kind of, you know, psychological gaslighting almost. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, was he also very loving? Because for you to have stayed with him for that long, there must have been some really positive things as well.
So he, for a start, like he was very charming individual. You know, and he could hold the attention of a room very easily. He was also incredibly intelligent and interested in a lot of different subjects. Mm. And we also, you know, we also had some things in common. And so he could kind of, you know, turn on the, I don't know, the love and attention when he wanted to.
Yeah. Mm. And so when he realized you were leaving him after all this time, how did he react?
I don't know, because I didn't tell him that I was leaving. I thought about it long and hard, but I felt that I wouldn't feel safe if I told him that I was going to leave.
Yeah.
And so I did what I felt I could do, which was to write and leave him a letter explaining why I felt that I had to leave.
Yes, yes, I understand. And so you left and the marriage then, you got the divorce and everything. And was that, did that go as you would have liked it to, or was it, did he make it difficult for you?
I think once I had filed for divorce, I think maybe he understood that's where things were heading. Right. And it was actually an easier process than I anticipated, which was a real relief. Yeah. I think the bigger kind of mountain for me was the emotional side of it. And it was like the grief of coming out of that marriage, you know, for what it had been and also for what it hadn't been, you know, because I was still attached, you know, emotionally attached to this man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can just imagine how hard it must have been, Helen. And, you know, with that, obviously your mum's illness as well. I mean, it was probably so much for you to take. So what sort of support were you able to get to, you know, get through that very difficult time?
For me, it was mainly the support of my therapist and a couple of very good friends at that time. I also started reading, you know, some self-help books. And also when I very first left my marriage, my employer was very good and they gave me some special leave because, you know, there was no way that I could concentrate at work. But yeah, I fairly quickly like started a new relationship, and I was very aware of the fact that I'd come out of a very unhealthy relationship, and I was absolutely determined that I wasn't going to repeat the same mistakes. And so I really needed that support to be able to look at, you know, how am I showing up in this relationship? How is the other person showing up? Is it healthy? Is it all right? Is it different this time?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's hard to do, isn't it? And I'd like to sort of talk about how that changed the way you live your life, because, you know, you were now free to be who you were really meant to be. And it seems like you found, you know, someone to support you in terms of a relationship as well. Tell us a bit about what changed in the way you lived your life.
It's been a gradual process. One of the things that really shifted things for me was when I had the opportunity to leave my job and retrain as a coach. So my job had been in human resources, and I had been coaching as part of that. But a few people had suggested to me, oh, you know, why don't you become a coach? And I ignored them for a while. But eventually I thought, yeah, actually, I think I could really enjoy that. And so I started a diploma in transformational coaching. And, you know, as you probably know, you know, when you go on these sorts of qualifications or courses, you go on your own journey of self-development. And it was on this coaching course that I came across this idea of there being like different drivers of life, like that we're all kind of perhaps driven by different things, like unconsciously. And, you know, and there were things like, oh, you know, maybe you could be driven by trying to be a perfectionist, or you're driven by working really hard, or you're driven by trying to control everything, or you're driven by people pleasing. And it was like, when I learned about that, I was like, and it's just like, oh wow, yeah, that's me all over. And so it just opened up this new area of wanting to find out all about this. And like, what does it mean, and where does it come from, and how do I stop? and thus began this like amazing journey of, okay, how do I recover from people pleasing, and trying to find different resources to help me do that? Part of that actually was about learning about mindfulness and meditation. And part of it was learning about boundaries. Actually, that was a big one. Yeah.
Boundaries is generally one of the biggest, especially in relationships where one person's feeling controlled by the other. It's generally because we've not understood where our boundaries lie, let alone learn to enforce them, right? I'm curious to know, because it feels like you became your own first client. You know, you had to work on yourself, and you had to kind of heal yourself. And how did you do that?
Yeah. I would say like it's an ongoing journey. You know, I think it's going to be a lifelong journey, to be honest. I mean, it started for me, it actually started with the mindfulness and meditation. And again, it started, funnily enough, from a continuing professional development course I went on mindfulness for coaching, and just something drew me towards it. And it was from that suddenly the light bulb really came on for me about, oh, hang on, like, I'm not my thoughts and my feelings. Oh, wow. Like, that was so incredibly helpful, because I was such an overthinker, and I had the most loud inner critic that anyone could possibly have, you know, always, you know, telling me how awful I was. And so to be able to start to have a separation out from that, and be able to step back from what I was thinking and what I was feeling, was such a gift, actually. And also, you know, the meditation practice, again, it was such a gift, because for a start, you know, as somebody that was kind of in people pleasing mode, you know, it meant that I was giving my attention to everybody else all the time, and tuning into what they're thinking and what they're feeling. Whereas when I was meditating, I wasn't doing that anymore. I was bringing my attention to myself and to my own thoughts and my own feelings, which was, so that was a beautiful tool to use. And it also helped me realize, actually, you know, when I give my attention to myself, the world keeps on revolving. It's amazing. Like other people, they just get on with their lives. Yeah, how amazing is that? I know. So yeah, so mindfulness meditation has been huge, and I started my own meditation practice from then on. Yeah,
big fan. A lot of, you know, self, going within yourself, and, you know, becoming comfortable with who you were, and at what point did you feel ready to take what you learned, you know, from obviously your training, but also from your own experience to now help other people?
Yeah, it did take me a little while, because when I was doing the coaching training, I had this vision of being a career coach or something similar, because my background was human resources. So it made sense, right, that I would just kind of continue with that. But of course, you know, I had this realization of, wow, if I'm going to, you know, commit my life to coaching other people, it's really got to be about something that I'm really passionate about. I thought it's going to be women who are also in the place that I was, you know, really suffering with giving too much of themselves away to other people and not taking care of themselves. I think it occurs to people at different points. For some people, it's, you know, when their children leave home, because, you know, maybe suddenly they've got more time on their hands and they start reflecting on their life and on their relationship. And it's maybe a point where the relationship is maybe going to change anyway.
Yeah.
And they're kind of wondering, you know, what is it that we want, and do we still want the same things? And sometimes it's actually been older women, like, that are retiring. And again, maybe just it's at that, I guess, a kind of a transition point where they're just reflecting on, you know, what do I want for this next period of my life? And how do I want my relationship to be? And maybe it's not quite what I want it to be. You could have a perfectly healthy relationship, but it's just that you've grown apart, and maybe you want really different things out of life now. Like, it doesn't have to be that it's, you know, a really difficult or unhealthy relationship. Sometimes relationships end, you know, not all relationships are meant to last a lifetime.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's okay. That's okay. That's, you know, so you can come to, you know, quite an amicable ending of a relationship that way, you know, where it's just time for you to move on. It's interesting, because somebody was asking me the other day, you know, in terms of kind of, you know, people pleasing patterns and, you know, and this kind of this focus on others, you know, is that more of a women thing? Or and it's interesting, because it isn't, like, it affects both men and women equally.
Yes.
It's just that maybe it shows up in slightly different ways, and maybe the way we talk about it would perhaps be a little bit different. And, you know, and there are, of course, different influences in terms of, you know, or how you're meant to show up, you know, in terms of being masculine, or how you're meant to show up in terms of being feminine, that have an impact.
Yes.
But, you know, yeah, we're all human.
And in terms of the people you work with, you know, can you give us a flavor of the kind of person you might work with? Would it be just one or the other? Is it mainly women, or do you work with couples as well?
Yeah, I mainly work with women, though I do work with a few men too. Yeah. And from various walks of life, just people that are recognizing that they can't say no. Basically, and that this has become problematic, and that they're often exhausted. They're often finding that they're avoiding conflict, and they're just, you know, and they want to be able to speak up for themselves, and they want to show up more as equals in relationships, but you don't have perhaps the confidence or the tools or the know-how of how to do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's always good to take responsibility for your own role in situations, but when it starts to leak into you taking the blame for everything that goes wrong, that's when it becomes really unhealthy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And what sort of things do you suggest that they do to become less of a people pleaser?
I think there's no like one right way to go. Like, people have to find what works for them.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, one of the key places to start is just providing a space for people to turn the attention on themselves. Because it just sounds so simple to do, but when you're used to just automatically always scanning your environment, scanning your situation for what's going on with other people, you know, what are they thinking and feeling about, how are they behaving, how are they going to react to this, you know, what if I do this, what are they going to say then, to turn your attention towards yourself, it feels uncomfortable, it feels like kind of wrong. So it's just learning to begin to do that. And then when we do that, okay, what do we then do? It's like, okay, well, how do we know what we're feeling? You know, because again, like, when we're so busy paying attention to other people, we often become disconnected from what we feel.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what I'm feeling. Have I got some feelings in there? Yeah. You know, or we're just like busy ignoring how we feel because that's kind of what we've been taught to do.
Yeah.
So tuning into like how we're feeling, just like getting to know yourself. Quite often, you know, if I ask somebody at the beginning of our journey together, you know, perhaps like, oh, you know, where do you like to go out to eat? They probably like couldn't really tell me, like, they, I don't know, but they could probably tell me where their partner likes to go out to eat, right? They could tell me everything about what their partner likes and doesn't like. It's like, no, let's like focus on you now. You know, what lights you up? What is important to you? You know, start helping them to start dreaming about their own life rather than helping everyone else live theirs.
Oh, it's beautiful. I think it's just, it feels like someone who's spent their whole life, you know, minimizing their own wants and needs, perhaps because people around them weren't interested or didn't think that their wants and needs were important. It was always about somebody else. And so that's, I suppose, a coping mechanism there is that, okay, then in that case, I'm just going to ignore my own wants and just, you know, get the attention by being the best people pleaser I can be.
Yeah. And I'll just try harder and harder and harder and hope that somehow I'll be happy about that.
So I have a couple more questions, Helen. I want to ask you how, you know, you said you were able to find someone who, you know, with whom you have a much healthier relationship. Did you, at that point, apart from knowing what you didn't want, did you have a sense of what you wanted, you know, in line with what you're helping your clients to do? Did you have a clear sense of, this is the kind of person I really need in my life?
Not particularly. You know, I wish I could say, you know, yes, I had it all figured out, exactly what I was looking for, and I went about it in a very sensible way. And no, I really didn't. I mean, you know, now looking back, you know, all the stuff that I've learned since, I just, honestly, I think the universe was just being kind to me. And I think I've learned a lot just from being it, being with somebody that is a much healthier individual, somebody that has clear boundaries, you know. And so that's, you know, that was already like a huge thing for me, was, oh, you know, not only have I got to learn how to kind of set and communicate boundaries myself, you know, how do I receive them from other people? You know, that's been fascinating to me. It's like when it's hard for us to set boundaries with other people, it's often also hard for us to receive them. And it's a journey of kind of learning to do both, and discovering that actually, like, they create more safety and intimacy in the relationship. Because, you know, because of course my fear had been, oh, you know, if I start creating boundaries, then it's going to push the other person away, or that they're going to be angry with me, or, you know, they're not going to like me as much. And realizing actually with somebody that's healthy, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. But I think also it's something you've got to train yourself to not, because I'm thinking, you know, to be a reformed people pleaser, because the people pleasing gave us, or gave you, or whoever's, you know, a people pleaser, some kind of buzz, you know, that they need me, and, you know, that I'm here to make their life better, and that's why they love me. And if you suddenly come across somebody who's not as needy and not as, you know, not giving you that buzz, you've got to learn to not feel rejected by it as well, don't you?
It is a question of, well, if I'm not in this relationship because I'm needed, then what is this about? Yeah. Like, what? Yeah. And that's a big shift.
Yes.
As well.
Mm. And how did you navigate that shift?
Oh. In a rocky way. Like, yeah. I mean, I remember one of kind of my big realizations was that there were times when I felt, frankly, like a bit bored in the relationship. And then like there was this part of me saying, oh, actually, you know, you've just labeled it bored. How about though, if you reframe that, and maybe it's not boring, maybe it's safe, maybe it's peaceful, maybe it's just new and you're not familiar with it.
I just love that, because I think it means that it gives you space to now focus on pleasing yourself. Mm. Perhaps time you never had before, because you were so busy pleasing other people. But it's interesting, because I think, you know, even with the best will in the world, some of us just addicted to the drama of a volatile relationship, you know, either because it makes us feel needed, or, as you said, you know, it makes it interesting, you know, a very sort of twisted level. It's interesting, you know, rather than be with someone who's like very calm, peaceful, and self-reliant, and you know.
So yes. I mean, one of the things that I'm learning at the moment, because I'm doing some training with the somatic school, so kind of, you know, really tuning into what's going on in our bodies, and been learning a lot about how we're often drawn to more intense experiences. And so that, you know, that goes along with, oh, well, you know, if you're in a relationship where there is a lot of drama, you know, you could almost kind of just be drawn to, you know, the intensity of the ups and the downs.
Yeah.
But that is very dysregulating.
Yes.
You know, that you end up in this kind of, oh, I must be alert all the time, you know, ready for when the next drama is going to happen.
It's almost like an addiction, isn't it?
Mm.
You're addicted to that drama. So my final question, Helen, for you is, you know, you've obviously had quite a journey, and it's been painful, but also it's been redemptive in many ways, and you've come out the other end. Now you're helping others. So if I were to ask you, you know, what is your definition of a fulfilled life? What would that be?
A fulfilled life. I think for me, a fulfilled life means one where you can enjoy each day from a place of inner peace, of knowing that you're like aligned with your soul's purpose, and that you're, yeah, that you're in that place of trusting what life brings you.
Yeah. Mm. And have you been able to articulate even to yourself what your soul's purpose is?
Mm. Yes. Yeah, it's why I do what I do. Because I really believe that having healthy relationships and good emotional connections with other people is the key to our happiness. And when we are stuck in kind of old programming, such as, you know, people pleasing, which we just picked up as we were growing up, it can really have a negative impact on those relationships. But I know, you know, we can break free of them. Absolutely. And yeah.
Yeah, and from everything you said, it feels like the first relationship you really need to focus on is the one with yourself. Because once you've dealt with that, maybe everything else becomes that little bit easier.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, the relationship that we have with ourselves, yeah, it was the one that I was avoiding for, oh, so many years. Yeah, I mean, that quote from the Bible about, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, I liked that quote, except that I just didn't know how to do the bit about how to love myself.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, well, maybe I can just do the loving other people bit and somehow it'll work out. Yeah. And it didn't. But yeah, I think, yeah, I'm now on that journey, and I can say, you know, I can say I love myself, whereas I couldn't before, amazing.
It's a huge, huge achievement to even be able to say that, I think, you know, and I really applaud you, you know, for your courage in taking that step, you know, especially in a very difficult time in your life, and more so to come out the other end and find a really healthy relationship, mm-hmm. and to be able to help others to do the same, I think is just wonderful. Thank you so much, Helen.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I hope that you found this conversation with Helen insightful. The key takeaway for me is the fact that in any relationship there are two people who are creating a certain dynamic, and in relationships that become very controlling or abusive, it's often easy to blame the person who is perhaps the more controlling or abusive of the two. But what Helen's story reminds us is that actually, for that person to be that way, the person on the receiving end has played a role, whether they're a people pleaser, whether they have not laid out their boundaries clearly enough or communicated them in an effective way. So I think the key takeaway for me is that if you want to have healthy, fulfilling relationships, we need to first focus on the relationship we have with ourselves and really become mindful of how we are showing up in relationships with other people and what it is that is giving us joy and what is giving us a buzz in that particular relationship, and whether in that we are sowing the seeds of some future discontent. Look after yourselves. Thank you so much for joining. And as ever, I want to end this podcast by thanking Mike Pearl for his beautiful music, both at the start and the end of this episode, and all the other ones. If you would like Mike to create similarly beautiful music, you can get in touch with him direct by email on MP, that's M for Mike, P for Pearl, mp969696@hotmail.com. And I hope you'll join me again very soon. Bye for now.